Welcome to the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard. Thank you for listening online. Be sure to check out our website weekly as we bring Sacramento and the world to you. The 503 Report at www.503report.com, where America's voice is heard.
Message real clear. California is burning. What the hell are you going to do about it? And it's not just California. It's extreme weather events throughout the country and the world. It's not a game of politics. It's an existential threat to our whole well-being and way of life. So at least come up with some response. This really transcends one party or another. This is about human beings.
Can't be sleeping. Keep on waking. Without the woman next to me. Guilt is burning, inside I'm hurting. This ain't a feeling I can keep. So blame it on the night. Don't blame it on me. Don't blame it on me. Blame it on the night. Don't blame it on me. Don't blame it on me.
Well, Governor, we're not going to blame it on you, but how dare you try to pass the buck and blame it on everybody else in the Republican Party? A lot of things have been out there in legislation that have been defeated by you and the Democrats the last few years, okay? Let's go through a couple of them right now that are very important up here in northeastern California, the forests. So what's going on? Yeah, California is on fire right now, but we need to thin out our forests. There's a lot of dead fuel out there, and regulations are preventing that. Now, there's been a couple of bills passed. Very few of them, but not a lot of work is getting done. What are you going to do about it, Governor? What is your plan? Another one. We have $2.5 billion set aside for water and dams and repair and making more storage capacity. Now, that's right now. That's going to take a few years, but we've had this in place for a long time. If we had more water storage, it would be a little bit easier for us to fight those fires out there and for folks at their homes to do a little bit better job as well. So those are just a couple of things. So I'm going to play that again. You know, Governor, what are you going to do? And I'd like to hear your plan on that.
Real clear. California is burning. What the hell are you going to do about it?
Yeah, Governor, I'd like to hear from you. My phone lines are open at 1-866-882-1277. What the hell are you going to do about it, Governor Brown? With me, as always, my good friend, struck a chord with me, my good friend, Andrew Wellborn. How you doing, buddy?
How do you really feel, Tim? Feels like you're kind of on fire here today, buddy, on that. And you're absolutely right. And I'm glad you made the points that you just made. Excellent, excellent intro for today's show. And you're absolutely right, man. I mean, look, environmental control in the state of California is the reason why California is on fire. Look, we've got the ability to be able to manage our lands a little bit better, don't you think? Maybe we need to get in there and basically think about human needs, you know, the homes, the individuals' properties when it comes to protecting some of the ecosystems that are out there. Prioritizing human beings over the ecosystem sometimes must be the number one priority in government. And those are tough decisions. Human beings or maybe a little desert rat. I don't know. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And, of course, Tim, as you know, we are where America's voice is heard, my friend.
We are where America's voice is heard, and America's voice was heard last night. We'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. But, you know, we've had the spotted owl up here. We've had all kinds of things going on up here. And to hear the governor, he's been pretty quiet on a lot of things, but to get out there and call out the Republicans, what the hell are you going to do about it? They put a couple things in play. Not the end-all solution for everything, Andrew, but a couple things that would really help. And I really think thinning out the forest of all that fuel out there, we could see some of it up here in northeastern California. We drive along the roads that are going in and around the communities around here. They are doing things like that. But in a lot of those areas, the Santa Barbara Mountains with the Dodge Fire, where all these big fires and things are, there is just so much fuel. And, of course, a lot of that is, you know, the governor was really talking about climate change. That is his biggest thing out there. We haven't had any water. We haven't had any rain. But, again, like I said earlier, we can have a plan in place. We have that money. It's set aside for infrastructure and to build those dams to get more water capacity and water storage. That takes a few years. That's not right now. But had we done this a while ago, a few years ago, and in times of plenty, we would have had plenty of water to do things and to fight things.
Well, look, I'm on the record, I don't know how many times, man, acknowledging the importance of ecosystems across the state of California and across the nation. But at the same time, what about our ecosystem when it comes to human life? And the bottom line is this, exactly what you just said, Tim. You know, we drive by these areas up and down the freeways, up and down our private roads, and we see not only the danger, but the opportunity maybe for private sector jobs to be created, not government sector jobs, but private sector jobs for companies to come in and be able to clear out this fuel. And that's that is the problem. I mean, the bottom line is when that fuel is there, as we all know this up here, and I know our listenership understands this up here in Northern California. So bear with me, local listeners here, just a little bit, because this is what's got to be communicated down southern part of the state. The individuals down in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Almanor, and all these other liberal leftist areas, you know, they got to understand, you know, what happens if Oakland gets on fire. What happens? Oh, we forget that it did get on fire.
Wow, was that a fire?
Was that a fire because of, you know, certain things that we don't allow to occur. But without a doubt, this is not a Republican problem. This is not a result of Republican conservative policies. This is exactly what the Republican conservative policies have been warning against, Tim.
They have, and they have really since I've been a voting age, the Auburn Dam down in the Sacramento area when I was a young man, and just things like that, and a great opportunity for private jobs. We have all seen in the past, I've been up here 35 years, the lumber industry in northeastern California is pretty much gone. We had two or three mills here in Susanville, and in the outlying areas, we're down to Collins Pines in the Chester area, mm-hmm. and that is it. You know, Reading might have some, but the regulations for what they have, it's easier to go somewhere else and do work, and our forests are paying for that.
Look, when we're prioritizing $65 billion to a failed educational system that's happening throughout California, and folks, yes, it is failing. The education system is failing here in California in comparison to the rest of this nation. But when you prioritize that much funding, you're not leaving enough revenue and resources available for this inevitable catastrophe. You know, I mean, so what are we going to do as Californians? Are we going to start looking at this government and say, look, you need to reprioritize this funding? Absolutely. The bond, the water bond that was passed. Where is that money going towards what it was supposed to be for? We all talked about that on past shows as far as subsidies here and subsidies there. And it was distributed out in other areas, you know, for government buildings rather than for what it was supposed to be for. So, you know, ultimately, this is the type of rhetoric, you know, that we hear whenever the leftists, when they get their hand caught in that cookie jar, when they get up against the rings. This is a perfect time for Republicans and conservatives to start making the point. You got to be careful. You don't want to appear angry. You don't want the Rand Paul type candidate to be out there talking angrily towards the people of California, because that's not going to bode well. But at the same time, we have to begin to present the importance. You know, an entire ecosystem possibly is being destroyed because we did not manage that ecosystem properly.
Well, the governor talked about in his election campaign he wanted to reform CEQA and maybe the EPA a little bit, and none of that has happened right now. He talked a big talk, and like a lot of politicians do, and he just kind of skirted around, and he has not done anything when it comes to that. There was a great opportunity to help that out. Private sector jobs, the most important thing that we have going in our economy to make things better, not just big government and to have more programs, more bureaucracy and like that. Let the people get out there and work. And you can do things like that with the infrastructure plans that those bond measures were going to do. $2.5 billion, man, that can go a long way up and down the state, not just in Northern California where the water storage is really key. The snow, we have to have that to store the water so it can go everywhere else. But in fact, the whole state, Andrew.
Well, look, it's another classic example of what we just saw with the EPA did earlier this week. I mean, CEQA has been doing the same thing. Regulatory agencies, whether they be on the national level or the state level, in this case out here in California, CEQA has been just unchecked by the legislature.
Boy.
CEQA is just making these policies, you know, that have absolutely no legislative input or legislative authority or legislative direction. You know, so at one point in time, we're going to have to start thinking about reining in these regulatory agencies. For goodness sakes, we just see that the California Fish and Game Commission basically adopted a ban on statewide bobcat trapping without any type of legislative consent or input. You know, these regulatory agencies, folks, these are the bureaucrats, the bureaucratic power. You know, bureaucrats, they've got this arrogance that all they have to do is wait out members of the legislature, and to a point it is true, and it is a direct representation of you, the voter, putting in term limits. There is absolutely zero power legislatures have now over bureaucratic regulatory agencies.
We heard a lot about that at talk last night, where they need to have the power is with the legislature. How can they make policy? They're to regulate what is going on and to say, hey, no, you can't do that. Instead, like you said, they just go out there and they're passing things, they're saying things, with not giving a you-know-what about any consequences whatsoever.
You know, it seems like that the legislature is being lobbied and controlled more by regulatory agencies than the people. And it's interesting to see how many members of the California legislature are actually introducing direct legislation on behalf of regulatory agencies. And, you know, when it comes down to that, how many of those pieces of regulations are being stopped because members of the legislature realize that maybe the regulatory agencies are becoming way too powerful, and you know that power is what's hurting the people of California. And so Californians, we've got to wake up to the fact that regulatory agencies and commissions out here are beginning to impact you in your daily life.
Absolutely.
Okay, California, time for something maybe you know or you don't, and across this nation. The year is 1782. This is kind of cool. I did not realize this. George Washington first creates the Purple Heart Medal as commander of the Continental Army. It was originally named the Badge of Military Merit. Wow. 1933. See, this has been going on for so long, folks. The Iraqi government slaughters over 3,000 Assyrians in the village of Samal. The day becomes known as the Assyrian Martyrs' Day. Of course, 1938, the Nazis, they closed the theological department of Innsbruck's University. 1941, 550 Jews are shot in the Kiznev Ghetto of Romania.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
If you are seeking an alcoholic,
dreaming in red, white, and blue.
And now, it's live from the high desert in the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's the 503 Report, Northeastern California's original political talk show, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And here's your host, Tim Reinertsen.
Thank you, Stan. Welcome back, everybody. The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Heard every Friday right after the news here on 1240 KSU. Live streaming on the World Wide Web at SierraDailyNews.com.
Lots going on up here in this part of the country, in the northeastern part of California, and, of course, the northern part of the state of Nevada. Hot August nights going on in Reno, Nevada. I see all the cars cruising through up here, man. Great event, big events. Unfortunately, I probably won't be able to attend that because I'm going to prioritize our local blues and brews, sponsored by the Lassen County Farm Bureau and Every Bloomin' Thing. I got to tell you, man, that's always been a cool event. Usually I'm kind of concerned. Usually I miss it because I go back to Detroit every time. But this year, we timed our trip back to Detroit around this. And so, folks, looking forward to possibly seeing a lot of you out there at Every Bloomin' Thing tomorrow night. And, of course, we all got to be careful this weekend. We all know what happens whenever we start acting and celebrating like adults with adult beverages. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And, of course, we are where America's voice is heard. You know, Tim, believe it or not, I guess we're going to talk a little bit about the debates last night. And I've got to put this disclosure out there. You know, folks, I have not listened. I have not read. I haven't heard any evaluations or any analysis since the conclusion of the debates last night, purposely, because I wanted to come in here and talk.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, Tim, we knew we were going to do our analysis.
Yes.
And then afterwards, we'll see how close or far off we are with the big boys, you know, at the national level. But I got to tell you, you know, right off the bat, I preferred the first debate first. For some reason, I thought the first debate, the warm-up act, was a better act than the main act for a lot of reasons. That crowd was not distracting. You know, for the most part, the candidates appeared more adult. They appeared more focused. They appeared more precise with their answers. I mean, look, I am just excited. I think that we've got 17 viable candidates, for real. Even the two individuals I really don't care for actually did very well. And it's almost unfortunate that the Highlands approach that there can only be one is actually going to be it's going to be devastating to see as individuals fall off. Now, I was really concerned because I thought that there'd be a lot of womp, 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 womp when you got 17 individuals trying to portray the same message over and over. You know, it's just going to get, you know, boring. But I thought it was going to be boring. It wasn't boring. It was well informed. And really, when it's going to come down to, Tim, the American people, or should we say Republican voters, even the American people, because
sure.
I think
they're reaching out for both sides.
I think there could be some crossovers that come over into the Republican party as a result of these debates. Look, you know, the bottom line is this: keep these debates going. I think they should set it up to where the next round will be like 7 instead of 10. So move people up and down.
I like that idea.
You know, like Major League Baseball does, you know, move people up and down as it goes, and just keep it going the way it was. Now, I was concerned at first listening to the questionings by Fox News, and let's face it, Fox News is a libertarian channel. They're not conservatives, they're a libertarian channel, which is why I don't watch them that much anymore. You know, it was kind of interesting because it seemed like that they were more concerned about trying to pit one against another. They were very antagonistic when it came to their line of questionings rather than being tough. And I want to praise the candidates, because it appeared that no one bit to some of the traps, I believe, that the moderators from Fox News were trying to set for those candidates. And so overall, I thought all of them did pretty well. I mean, obviously some did better than others. And, you know, Tim, we were talking earlier, and, you know, I think that Carly Fiorina, I've been a fan of ever since she ran for the U.S. Senate out here in California.
Yeah, yes.
And I mean, without a doubt, I know that all the pundits and all the experts, they're going to promote probably one of the biggest winners last night was Carly Fiorina. And it's unfortunate. I believe that she should have been on the 10 stage rather than 7 stage.
Absolutely, and I'd like to play a bit of what she said at the very end on what it takes to be the commander-in-chief.
I think to be commander-in-chief in the 21st century requires someone who understands how the economy works, someone who understands how the world works and who's in it. I know more world leaders on the stage today than anyone running, with the possible exception of Hillary Clinton. Understands bureaucracies, how to cut them down to size and hold them accountable, and understands technology, which is a tool, but it's also a weapon that's being used against us. Most importantly, I think I understand leadership, which sometimes requires a tough call and a tough time. But mostly, the highest calling of leadership is to challenge the status quo and unlock the potential of others. We need a leader who will lead the resurgence of this great nation and unlock its potential once again.
You know, very, very poised, very, very, you know, clear, very, very concise. But at the same time, I mean, you know, how does Carly Fiorina get that message, which everybody's saying, you know, to propel her to the next level?
Well, Andrew, what I saw from her was somebody who I thought was presidential sitting there. She was very thoughtful, very concise. She engaged with the other people that were there. I loved her answers. You know, of course, she was the CEO of one of the hugest companies back in the 90s and early 2000s down in the Silicon Valley in the Bay Area. And she is absolutely correct. How she lost, it's in California. That's how she lost. But she is a very viable candidate. I thought she had a home run. I thought she hit it out of the park. And you are absolutely correct. That first debate was excellent. I really liked that. I really liked how they engaged with each other, and I thought she was the clear winner to me of out of the seven.
Well, Governor Gilmore impressed me for the most part. You know, I mean, how many people know who Governor Gilmore out of Virginia is? I mean, that whole line of candidates, you know, appeared the adults. You know, they appeared mature. You know, Carly Fiorina, we forget. You know, I mean, she gave Barbara Boxer a run for her money out here, and she did not lose by that much. But you know, I just think that if more Republicans would have shown up during that U.S. Senate race out here, that we probably would see Carly Fiorina as our U.S. senator from California.
And you know, look ahead a little bit, Andrew. Let's say she has a failed bid here, but we're going to have a vacancy coming up in a few years, and I think she would be ripe for that another run at the U.S. Senate.
Well, obviously she is vice presidential.
Absolutely.
Basically, I mean, that's what she's doing. There's a couple of the candidates that I was watching throughout the debate that really, really was setting themselves up for very, very good possibility of vice presidential picks. All right, Tim, what's our next one?
Okay, we have Senator Marco Rubio, who I thought did very well last night, and he is going to be talking about taxes in America.
The first thing we need to do is we need to even out the tax code for small businesses so that we lower their tax rate to 25%, just as we need to lower it for all businesses. We need to have a regulatory budget in America that limits the amount of regulations on our economy. We need to repeal and replace Obamacare, and we need to improve higher education so that people can have access to the skills they need for 21st century jobs.
Boy, a lot in 22 seconds right there, Andrew.
You know, the problem with Marco Rubio is, you know, we've learned our lesson with youth, and you know what, if you took some of the President Obama clips like we just did right there, you played it, he'd sound the same way, very poised, very, very articulate, very, very, you know, strong in his thoughts. And so the communication level of Marco Rubio is almost the equivalent of some of the things that we heard with President Obama with Hope and Change. His youth is going to be the problem. We've said it, you know, even my girl and I, we were watching debates, just looked at him like, man, he's just, you know, the problem is that he's not as young as he looks, but, you know, potentially he could be one of the younger presidents. And, you know, we just haven't done that well when you take a look at the youth factor in U.S. administrations in the past, and history shows that.
Do you think that that is probably the biggest thing that he has going against him? Because he certainly got out a great message, I thought, last night. And I know that you didn't watch all the shows afterwards and heard things afterwards, but a lot of the folks thought that he was one of the top two or three on that tier of 10.
Well, if I had to predict, I would predict that there's probably segments about who Hillary Clinton probably, you know, feared the most. I mean, this is just normal stuff, folks. I mean, it's not like this is rocket science. But probably there was a big discussion, and I would have to probably guess that probably the left probably said Marco Rubio because they'd rather have Hillary Clinton go against Marco Rubio than anybody else because, you know, just about every poll shows her beating him in every state at this point. But once again, you know, Marco Rubio is poised, obviously, to be some part within a Republican administration. Vice presidential possibility, you know, for instance, if Jeb Bush does not win the nomination, and I have to tell you, you know, we're clear on the show saying that this is Jeb Bush's to lose. And I, quite frankly, he's doing a real good job right now at trying to lose this nomination. He's not coming across well. But ultimately, if Jeb Bush definitely loses this nomination, Marco Rubio once again becomes a viable vice presidential candidate to secure Florida.
Do you? Okay, and I was just going to mention that the Florida on there, and he did very well, and he is a terrific speaker as well. And he is a very young senator, like President Obama was a very young senator. Mm-hmm. And you said we've had our youth problems. Is that the biggest thing? And let's say in 8 years, he'll only be 51 or 52 years old, about the right age, still pretty relatively young for presidential material.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, here's the deal. The bottom line is that the social experiment is over in America. You know, the millennials chose President Obama. I just don't know. I mean, the millennials are probably feeling a little burned right now. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the millennials, you know, shift. But always remember, Marco Rubio is Generation X.
Talk 8255-8256, toll free 1-866-882-1277. The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
Hey, Every Wednesday this summer at Quincy's historic Feather River Grange, come enjoy country dance lessons. Lessons are geared for beginners and intermediates, especially those who never thought they could dance. Texas Two-Step, Cowboy Cha-Cha, Cowboy Waltz, and others will be taught. The fun starts at 7 o'clock every Wednesday at Quincy Grange, Main Street, diagonally across from the CHP. $3 for adults, $2 for college students. 18 and over, please. This message, a community service of your favorite radio station.
The views and opinions expressed on the 503 Report do not necessarily represent those of staff or management of KSUE or Sierra Broadcasting Company, and are brought to you solely by Andrew Wellborn and the 503 Network.
Okay, California and the rest of this nation, time for something you may or you may not know. Today's date, August 7th, the year is 1942, the first American offensive in the Pacific in World War II, Guadalcanal in the Solomon Islands. Boy, that was a fight.
Man.
1976, U.S. Viking 2 goes into Martian orbit after 11-month flight from Earth. Good Lord. 84, the Japanese, they beat the U.S. for Olympic gold. We forget that, man. And then, of course, 1990, one that I remember very well, which actually made me pause. And a lot of our colleagues and friends remember this date, too. Desert Shield begins. The U.S. deploys troops to Saudi Arabia. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And, of course, we are where America's voice is heard. Other candidates did well. Some of them rose. I think some of them are going to fall off. But the bottom line is this. I want to see the debates continue. I like what the RNC is doing. I think every candidate should be in every debate coming into Iowa. You know, let's face it. Let's debate it all the way up to Iowa. Let's stop our debates after Iowa as Republicans, because I think after this last debate, the Democrats are beginning to realize they made a huge mistake by waiting all the way to October for their first. The Democrats are going to continue their debates through Iowa. Let's just concentrate on the campaigns once the elections begin.
Absolutely. And let's get to Mike Huckabee and what he had to say last night.
Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. President Obama is trust but vilify. He trusts our enemies and vilifies everyone who disagrees with him. And the reason we disagree with him has nothing to do with party. It has to do with the incredibly dangerous place that this world is going to be as a result of a deal in which we got nothing. We didn't even get four hostages out. We got nothing. And Iran gets everything they want. We said we would have anywhere, anytime negotiations and inspections. We gave that up. We said that we would make sure that they didn't have any nuclear capacity. We gave that up. The president can't tell us what we got. I'll tell you what the world got. The world has a burgeoning nuclear power that didn't, as the Soviets say, we might defend ourselves in a war. What the Iranians have said is, we will wipe Israel off the face of the map, and we will bring death to America. When someone points a gun at your head and loads it, by God, you ought to take them seriously, and we need to take that seriously.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, pretty direct, but you know what? I think the flaw that all candidates are going to make is trying to compare themselves to Ronald Reagan. I mean, stay off the Ronald Reagan approach. Most people don't even know, most voters today don't even know who Ronald Reagan is. A lot of the voters today were young kids when Ronald Reagan was in office. And so unless they know the history, people are like, who's Ronald Reagan when it comes to this? So ultimately, you know, the governor, you know, look, he made some great points. The question is whether or not that resonates, or are people going to feel like that they were just listening to an episode of one of his shows on Fox News?
Now, what hit me on that was is coming out and saying all the things that we did not get, and the fight that is going on right now in Congress. We've seen this morning already, Andrew, that a couple of Democrats in the Senate and the House are already saying, and they're from New York, that they're going to go against the Iranian deal out there. And he went on to say, of course, that they vilify anybody who is against what they want to do out there right now. So that was the message he gave last night. I thought he was very good at that.
Like I said, he came across well. The question now is acceptance. Once again, it's a little bit of womp, 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 womp. The question now is for the American people who they are going to believe to carry out the womp, womp.
All right, and here we go. We got to get this guy out there. Ah, yes, the Donald.
So,
If it weren't for me, you wouldn't even be talking about illegal immigration, Chris. You wouldn't even be talking about it. This was not a subject that was on anybody's mind until I brought it up at my announcement, and I said, Mexico is sending. Except the reporters, because they're a very dishonest lot, generally speaking, in the world of politics, they didn't cover my statement the way I said it. The fact is, since then, many killings, murders, crime, drugs pouring across the border, our money going out and the drugs coming in. And I said, we need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly. And I don't mind having a big, beautiful door in that wall so that people can come into this country legally. But we need, Jeb, to build a wall. We need to keep illegals out. Border Patrol, I was at the border last week. Border Patrol people that I deal with, that I talk to, they say this is what's happening because our leaders are stupid. Our politicians are stupid. And the Mexican government is much smarter, much sharper, much more cunning. And they send the bad ones over because they don't want to pay for them. They don't want to take care of them. Why should they when the stupid leaders of the United States will do it for them? And that's what's happening, whether you like it or not.
All you got to do is travel to Mexico and understand exactly what Donald was talking about. You know, I mean, you know, they talk about racism and class levels of society. Without a doubt, the people of Mexico within Mexico definitely view those individuals kind of at the level that Donald Trump was speaking about. So once again, it was truth. Now, look, my favorite quote was when he expressed leverage, folks. Now, here's the key with this. Leverage. Isn't that about leadership? The Donald just showed how he would leverage Russia, how he would leverage China. He would leverage Mexico and any other nations, America's interests first. When he leveraged the party right there in the first question, which, you know, unfortunately, Rand Paul made a huge mistake attacking that. You know, Rand Paul, man, good Lord. Just good Lord, Rand. But anyways, Donald Trump showed exactly how he would do it. He's leveraging the party in the name of the people. We should be excited about that. I would not be surprised as a result of this debate that Donald Trump actually increases his lead. He did not do a bad job. He did very well up there. He went up against professional debaters and he held his ground. He came out strong. He took on Megyn Kelly and Fox News. You know, look, at some point in time, you know, the political correctness part of Donald Trump's message is resonating. Now, you're going to hear people spin that as the angry American voter. No, it's not that they're angry. They're tired of government putting all of these requirements on them, restricting them in the name of political correctness. You can lose your livelihood because of political correctness. And I think that is what's resonating with the people across this nation. And yes, I do not think the Ross Perot factor, that all of a sudden you're going to start hearing history come out. Everybody's going to come out as a Ross Perot historian. One of the key things you're not going to hear is that Ross Perot lost because he was winning and dropped out. And so he disappointed people, which resulted in Bill Clinton only securing the White House by 46% of the American vote. So, you know, that strength cannot be overlooked. You know, leveraging is what leadership is about. And a president's job is to leverage the American interest over other interests outside of our borders.
And he did that very well. Do you think, Andrew, and I know you didn't see the afterwards, but a lot of folks were saying that the questions to Donald Trump were pretty hard, comparatively speaking to the other candidates, where they got some of them, but they all felt that Fox was pretty hard on Donald Trump, especially coming right out of the gate about the party question.
Look, just because you engage disparately against individual doesn't mean that you are being disparate against the entire gender. For instance, his little spout with Rosie O'Donnell doesn't mean that he's anti-women. So if I came out on this statement right here today and came out with an anti-Al Sharpton, a legitimate, factual-based anti-Al Sharpton, anti-Jesse Jackson, would that mean that I am anti-black, anti-American, African-American out there? Absolutely not. And I think that's what is being missed. You know, and Megyn Kelly, she should have been expecting that. I mean, she should have. Rand Paul was the biggest loser, I think, of the night by engaging the way he did. He showed a different type of angry. He looked like the angry libertarian going after. Now, here's the threat. Now, this is just my opinion. The threat right now with Donald Trump is with the libertarian control of the primary every presidential election, that conservative right that everybody's got to pander to get to. Donald Trump is beginning to revive an American vote. He's beginning to revive a real hope within middle American conservative values. See, Donald Trump is not running as a libertarian. He's not running as a conservative. He's running as an American Republican wanting to solve the problems of middle America. So this is a huge threat for the libertarian right control of the primaries that have existed for so long. And so, you know what? This is great. I don't understand why we always pander to the libertarian right, because the libertarian right always leave the party and go back to the libertarian party once their candidates lose. So good for Donald Trump. And I would be surprised if his numbers did not rise just a little bit. I don't think they're going to skyrocket, but I think more and more people are going to find him more and more appealing.
Yes. There's going to be some more, maybe a little bit more separation. And you were talking about switching things up, Andrew. The seven have some go up, some go down. Would you do that according to how they did, or would you just pick a random seven people, you know, just to go down and the seven to go up? How would you do that if you wanted to for the next? Wouldn't you like to see Garley Fiorina, maybe Rick Perry and Governor Gilmore on that national stage like that?
Actually, I'd see Rick Santorum come up, you know, or maybe Pataki come up. They both did well. I mean, poor Rick Santorum. It's got to be frustrated because traditionally, you know, the second place winner normally becomes the front runner, and Jeb Bush has stepped in all over him. You know, as far as that, it's got to be frustrating for Rick Santorum. But Rick Santorum's got a great message. He's got an incredible amount of experience. Pataki's got a great amount of experience. Fiorina, it could be an upstart. I don't know if she's ready to go to the top yet, but Gilmore definitely is the underdog. I mean, he's the surprise. You know, the amount of experience and how he portrayed the experience really, really resonated with me. So, I mean, I would just take a look at, I would throw some of the libertarians down on the bottom and just see how they react under the pressure of being thrown to the bottom. Are you capable of handling this type of pressure, or are you going to act like a little baby and show that you're really not presidential when it comes to that?
All right, Andrew, you got some other things we want to talk to. I know we've kind of bogarted the conversation on the debate, but it was a very good debate last night.
Well, look, John Kasich, I think, might be. I would not call him the real winner. You know, I mean, obviously, he squeaked onto the stage. He bumped Carly Fiorina, maybe, for the most part. Obviously, it's his home. The politics were in there, and I liked how Carly Fiorina handled that. You know, she just got up there, and she did her thing. But John Kasich did a great job. And obviously, I think John Kasich, you know, pretty much put himself in a viable position for vice president, no matter how you look at it. I mean, obviously, if Jeb Bush were to win the nomination, then the obvious choice for vice president would be John Kasich when it came to this. Obviously, you know, some type of deal with Marco Rubio, you know, look, future Secretary of State or some type of cabinet position would be in play. Donald Trump wins the nomination, then he's got to choose when it comes to this. He's going to have to choose Florida, he's going to have to choose Ohio, or he's going to have to choose maybe a woman, you know, when it comes to that, you know. And I think that he would pick Carly Fiorina not to try to clean up whatever this apparent image he has towards women, as much as that she's qualified, she's smart, she understands business, and she, as she plainly put it, knows probably absolutely more world leaders than anybody up there on that stage.
She could give Donald Trump a run on the business part of it as well, Andrew.
Well, I don't think she's going to jump to the polls. I mean, the bottom line is you're going to start seeing Hillary Clinton fall. Bernie Sanders is within 6 points in New Hampshire, for goodness sakes. The Democrats are struggling. They're in trouble. Like I said earlier, they made a huge mistake waiting until October in order to do their first debate. But Republicans, man, just chill out with these debates, okay? We got a couple of them coming up. Let's end them at Iowa. Once Iowa begins, then the candidates are going to make decisions. They're going to naturally drop off based on support, lack of support, and lack of money when it comes to that. Let's not be a part of the process of forcing the candidates because we want to pick and choose. Fox News did no different than any other news organization out there. They attacked the front runners and tried to prop the libertarians. I mean, that is so obvious with the way the line of questionings went, who they talked to. But let's not forget, man. My favorite candidate on stage last night, my favorite one, was Dr. Ben Carson. Ben Carson was just outstanding. You know, my wife and I were watching Donald Trump, and we were watching Ben Carson, and we really liked what both of those had to say. And I got to tell you, you know, Dr. Carson, you know, you got a long ways to go, but keep going. Now, do you belong up there on the top 10? I don't know if you belong on there in the top 10, but, you know, the polling over the next couple weeks, they're going to show that. And so Republicans, man, keep them there. 17 candidates should be on the debate floor every debate. You have an opening act and a closing act. And you know what? Get the crowds out, man. The crowds were quite annoying when it came to the interference with the candidates. First debate was really well because of the lack of audience interfering.
Outstanding analysis, Andrew.
Well, you know what? You know, we always want to remember that the political machine triumphs Republicans because it's a united minority acting against a divided majority. And that's what we are, conservatives, a divided majority. Okay, now, from our favorite book. It comes from John 14:27. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give you. Let not your heart be troubled. Neither let it be afraid. God bless you, America.
503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
You know, we want to thank those firefighters up there who are keeping California safe right now and containing all those fires. Those guys are doing great, along with all the men and women who work the toughest beat in the state, performing the duty so that you, our listener, up and down the state of California and across this nation can be safe.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Heard every Friday at 12:15 on 1240 KSUE at SierraDailyNews.com. About a half hour after the show, you can catch a rebroadcast, a podcast there as well. And don't forget, go to the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard. You can hear 4 years just about worth of shows on tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, right before the news. Grab a cup of coffee. And Sunday at 7:30 before pre-programmed material. Have a great weekend, everybody. Remember, we are all born free.
Hello, America. Let me thank you for your time.